nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, where there are trees available, along with lots of colorful dahlias and fresh bouquets, including subscriptions for bouquets. They're open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesday at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Life I lead. Well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
All right, listeners, you've joined us for In the Garden. I'm Oren, and on the line with us is Ed Bajarski, Master Gardener from Juneau. Are you there, Ed?
Good afternoon, Ed. Hi there.
Hi. Hello. And before we dive in, I want to let people know that a little bit later in the show, we're going to be taking callers. If anybody out there has a question about their garden and would like to put that question to Ed, feel free to call in. That's 772-3808 is the number to call to join us in this conversation today. But all right, Ed, it's been a little while since we were on the phone, because you've been traveling, but you're back now.
Yeah, we hit 90-degree temperatures in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Big booming thunderstorm back there. Sweet corn tomatoes and, ripe tomatoes on my brother-in-law's garden and elsewhere. Some great muskmelons and other great produce. Good beer and wine and Minnesota Garlic Festival. So, and a couple of nice family gatherings. So, but it is good to be back here in windy, rainy Juneau and back to work.
Yep. Well, it sounds like it was a nice getaway, but I'm sure there's plenty to do now that you've been gone this time of year, especially. Because you've got... Well, what are your priorities in the garden right now, as far as now that you're back and dealing with rain and the greenhouses? What are you up to this week?
All of that. And harvesting. We're in full-bore harvesting. My second crop of peas is coming on strong, so we're eating lots of snap peas, which are great, lots of tomatoes, lots of cucumbers in the greenhouse are doing just beautifully. Second crop of lettuce is ready to harvest here, and we're finishing the first crop of broccoli. That's got a ways. I'm hoping for the second crop to come on yet, but we've got beautiful beans and carrots and beets also. So harvesting is going great, but we're on the last of the raspberries, pretty much, but we're starting the harvest of blackberries. So that's, again, a new thing. And then apples are also, there's some yellow transparent apples and others are ready for, they're perfect right now for pie, making pies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apple pies, darn right. So, let's see, how are your tomatoes doing?
The tomatoes are looking good. Some of these are 6 to 7 feet tall. And one of the things I'm starting to do this time of year is pinch off the top flowers on those plants, because I want the energy of the plants to go into hopefully ripening all those green tomatoes that I have. And knowing that those others just, they won't, even if we got some little tiny tomatoes on them, they would be unlikely to manage to ripen into September, October. So we started doing some, trim the tips off of some of those. And at the same time, I'm really looking hard at my tomatoes and making sure there's enough air circulation, ventilation, and removing some lower leaves, again, for the same reason, since we've had some pretty wet weather since I've been gone, and plus some more as we speak, trying to keep the fungus levels low. And I can see on the cucumbers, and those will keep going a lot longer. Cucumbers are very sensitive, as well as we've got some nice zucchinis in there, too, one of which is heading for the harvest fair here in town this weekend. So you see if it wins a prize for a big zucchini. Cool. But, again, the squash, the zucchinis, and the cucumbers are very, very sensitive to fungus issues. So they will quit. I mean, they will quit bearing probably, if I get 3 more weeks of cucumbers, I'll be very happy with that, knowing what past history has been. But still, keeping them clean, if you see mildewed leaves, yellowing leaves, get those off of there, get them out of the greenhouse. And again, just maintain your ventilation. I noticed my garden sitter may have closed up one of the doors in my greenhouse, and I've been leaving them open all the time. So again, the air flows, all that fresh air flows right through. That's the hope, to keep the conditions drier and all that.
Right, yeah, that really is the important thing with greenhouses, especially this time of year, right, is ventilation, because it's kind of a race against sort of temperatures and moisture right now as far as staving off the mold on those leaves and everything else, right?
Very much so. Yesterday's temperatures in there, again, my single layer of visqueen, it hit 84 degrees for a high. We had some sunshine late in the afternoon yesterday, and then again it got down to 54 degrees overnight. So today it's not likely it's even going to hit 60 degrees inside the greenhouse because it's been cloudy and windy for us here. So that's worth just your greenhouse management is a challenge. And then, of course, I saw my brother-in-law's tomatoes that were just loaded, great big beefsteak tomatoes, and he had two different kinds of paste Roma-type tomatoes, which were just terrifically tasty. And, of course, this is in western Wisconsin. He was growing them outdoors and on trellises along with some of the other stuff, and they were growing great.
Yeah, I guess, we have to sort of do what we can with our tomatoes up here. Yeah, but so the recommendation...
I'm having a hard time with you, Orin. You're coming and going as you talk or something.
Yeah, I can hear it on your phone too. Yeah, a little connection struggle, but it sounds pretty clear right now. So as far as greenhouses go, we can leave callers with some advice. If you're doing tomatoes, pinch off those top flowers, clear away lower leaves, especially any yellowing leaves, to make sure ventilation is going on.
I suppose one more thing, if you have tomato plants that just aren't bearing fruit, and I've heard that from several folks, if they haven't set fruit yet, pull them out. Take them out of the greenhouse, because you aren't likely, unless you've got heat in the greenhouse to keep them going and potentially extra light that you can supplement, they probably aren't going to produce much for you. If they haven't already started doing that.
Right, so pull them out just to create more ventilation for the plants that are in there, is that right?
Exactly right, yes. And then this, that kind of translates into looking at your outside gardens, and whether it be potatoes, and some of my first crop of potatoes that I put in on Easter Sunday, some of those are starting to turn yellow. So those, and in fact, when I walked by there this morning, I noticed there were some potatoes right near the surface of the soil that were, they were above the surface of the soil. They're actually starting to grow out of the soil. So I need to throw some soil or sand around them to cover them up so they don't turn green. And again, if those tomato plants are starting to turn yellow, that's an indication of maturity. So you can cut, you or the gardener can cut those off and then even just throw a tarp over them so that they stay in the ground for a while, assuming other than whatever you might want to eat. But if you leave them in the ground for a while yet, then the skins will toughen up. And again, this is after cutting the tops off. And then wait and see if it, then the tarps help to keep them from getting too wet and or cracking or slugs attack, especially if those potatoes are sticking out of the ground too. So cover them up and leave them there. Gradually harvest as you need to until, if you want to leave them in there until mid-September or something like that. If they're all cut off and done, then you can dig them, clean them off, and bring them indoors to start the curing process on those, kind of like we talked about with garlic. And again, we'll probably wait till September and talk more about the harvesting and storage, and how to take care of them for longer term.
Right. Okay. So that's another thing to be looking out for people who grow potatoes, is checking out those yellow leaves, a sign of maturity. And then, so Ed, you just cut off the whole top of the plant at that point to stop it from maturing?
That's right. Yeah, get it with a knife or a set of clippers and just cut the top stems off. And again, like I mentioned, make sure that whatever potatoes are staying in the ground are covered with soil so they don't get exposed to light. And maybe, again, throw a tarp over them to help toughen up the skins. And that will be beneficial in the long run. The challenge sometimes is also, because we have mice and voles around, is that may be perfect conditions for them to move in, live underneath that tarp, or maybe you're using black plastic perhaps, and then they burrow into those potatoes and eat potatoes too.
Okay.
So you may want to be careful, watch for that. Again, if it's better protection if those potatoes are covered with a couple inches of soil.
Right. So the main thing there is, if your potatoes, like yours are, have grown enough that they're poking out of the soil, and if they're exposed to sunlight, that's going to turn them green, which at that point they're basically not edible anymore, right?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, you'd have to peel the green parts, the green skin off, and peel fairly deeply, because you can notice the green going down into the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them bitter. It also makes them, chemicals in there that are, let's see, glycosides, which are not good for us.
Right.
So you could still, if the potatoes were good and clean potatoes, you could save those for replanting next year, but it isn't the sort of thing you would feed them.
Right. And the best way to avoid that is just make sure that you've been adding soil to the top, or sand, or something, to protect them from sunlight. But yeah, that's an interesting consideration that you mentioned, with if you know you have mice or other burrowing critters around there, to be conscientious if you're using a tarp, because it'll create a habitat for them. The tarp, if you have
exactly.
a garden cat.
long ago when I gardened in Petersburg, I was sharecropping at the Fossen's place, I guess. I was growing through black plastic, cut holes in the black plastic. Mm-hmm. To grow potatoes, and they commented on how their cat, they had a couple of cats, and they would spend a lot of time out there in the potato patch just sitting out there, and I suppose what they were doing, they were listening, they could probably hear, or maybe smell, the voles and mice underneath the plastic, but of course they couldn't get to them, so it probably drove them crazy, unless they got lucky and found the right spot where they're maybe coming out from underneath that. So, again, yeah, it's worth thinking about. The same thing happens to me and other folks around here with beets and some, to a lesser extent, carrots. That the wolves love beets, and I have seen some of them where they're just about hollow out a beet or chew it down to not very much left. Again, this is if the shoulders, the top of the beet is exposed. So if you can cover them up with soil or sand, that really helps keep those critters from chewing on them. And that also applies actually to slugs again, and slugs go more for the carrots than for the beets. But again, you can see where the slugs may chew into the top of the carrot if it's sticking out of the ground somewhat.
Well, that is a great segue to something I wanted to address with you. We had somebody in the community came in and was alarmed at the possible threat of European black slugs. They had seen one in their garden, and they'd heard some horror stories from friends in other places around the state about the sort of the menace of this new black slug. And, you know, whether or not that actually poses a serious threat to any gardens around here more than regular slugs, it does kind of bring us to the next topic of, like, you know, more about techniques and approaches for defending your garden from slugs, but also kind of the broader conversation about, like, invasive pests and maybe invasive plants, and what can you do to kind of minimize the danger and the presence of those invaders. And, you know, so what do you think about that? Do you have any thoughts about the black slug?
You know, we have a few here, and there's a relative, which is a dark brown, kind of I wouldn't call them golden brown, but that's a very nice, rich brown color. Side by side, they look the same, but for color. And they have this texture, kind of like, I call it corduroy, you know, like corduroy cloth, a texture on their skin, rather than just your standard smooth gray slugs and some of the other different ones, most of which are also imported. You know, our native one is the big timber slug, the ones that get to be 4 to 6 inches long, which aren't that much of a threat to gardens. They tend to be more, say, in the native plants and stuff around.
Right.
But the imported pests, which probably came in on potted plants from down south.
Mm-hmm. Maybe potting soil.
Certainly, I've found different slugs, but I've also found different snails that come up with them too. Sometimes some pretty big snails who just fairly recently. Now, I don't know whether they will survive, but again, with the milder weather, even if they're coming up from Seattle and Washington area at least, we may have some new, you know, we're bringing in new species, and new species are moving north, and this is, I guess, we're helping out in the transportation as opposed to their
right.
migration. It's a relatively rapid migration. Like in my brother-in-law's garden back in Wisconsin, he had Japanese beetles, which are this iridescent black beetle that, particularly on his foldings, there were lots of them there. And there we were, you know, in the morning, go out, you find them, you get a jar with some soapy water, you just pick the beetles off and drop them in the water. We're fortunate we have a lot of imported pests. The European currant worm, which attacks currants and gooseberries earlier in the season, that we have to get after or try to protect our plants from. You know, you mentioned the slugs. There's other beetles and other insects, which are an issue here. And some of the weeds, again, there's a whole lot of invasive weeds. The Cooperative Extension Service has one or several pamphlets on invasive weeds that have come in. It can be anything from the beautiful, fragrant, flowering sweet rocket or dame's rocket. I know you have lots of it down there. We have lots of it here in Juneau. Foxgloves are another one, which is not native. Dandelions, you know, it isn't likely we're going to get rid of these things. But if we can keep after them and try to keep weeding them or don't let them go to seed, then we're trying to stop them. We're trying to stop them from reproducing. Same thing with the slugs, you know, take them out of the gene pool so they don't, of course.
Right.
That means picking, pulling, deadheading, doing whatever we can. And there's a whole lot of things. Japanese knotweed is a severe pest in places. I mean, it spreads underground. It doesn't grow from seeds. But still, it's a severe pest. I know I've seen big patches of it in Petersburg. We have big patches in Juneau and other places in Southeast, too. So, you know, we do what we can with some of these. Once you have them, you know, like the foxgloves, because they produce so much seed, it's very difficult. You're unlikely to use up or kill loft the seeds. Mm. You can pull young plants, but again, every time you turn the soil, some of those seeds get exposed because they can wait in the soil for years and years and years
right.
until they get exposed. So it's a battle.
It's a battle.
And again, we have to do what we can in our own yards and maybe, you know, ask if you can help your neighbors if you see they have an infestation of some rather weedy plant, that maybe you can offer to help them go after them. That's assuming we don't want them to grow and look beautiful like the box does and then sweet black.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting point. Your neighbors could very well, with some of those plants especially, be contributing to some stuff coming into your own. So would you say that, like, for people...
Yeah, I've heard even with the deer in Petersburg where they're pests for a lot of people's gardens, and then there's some soft-hearted folks who are feeding the deer
right,
probably right next to your garden. And, I mean, I'm a proponent of eat more deer as the pest control efforts myself, but some people are deer huggers, so we can't make everybody... It's hard to make everybody happy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so for this lady who talked to me about the black slugs, the advice for her is basically, if you see them, get them, collect them by hand, right? Like, that's the best possible way to eliminate slugs from your garden is to yourself remove them
sure.
by hand. Like, go out there at dusk, maybe, or whenever they're the most active, creeping out of their hiding places, and pick them up. Yeah, take them out of there with your hand.
Pick them up and, yeah, drop them into, you know, if you got a little jar or a can with some soapy or salty water, drop them in there to kill them off. Again, you can go out for your walks in the evening, maybe with a flashlight, and with a squirt bottle filled with about half and half ammonia and water. That will work quite nicely on them. You spray it on them, and they slime themselves to death. In the process, their death and... Of course, if you've got your regular route where you are slug hunting and you come back, 15, 20 minutes later, you may find that there's some more slugs that come out of the woodwork to feed on the slug that you shot first time around.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are moderately carnivorous.
Right, right.
Which might spook some people, too.
Yeah, and then you can get those ones. You punish them for their cannibalistic natures, those monsters.
Yeah. You're using them for bait.
Oh, gosh. What about slug fences? Are those practical around here, or are these guys too tough for those, like diatomaceous earth around your beds or stuff like that to kind of make little barriers that aren't necessary? Or, you know what I mean? Like, as far as kind of protecting your plants from slugs.
You know, and there's some folks who will go down to some of the beaches and get crushed shells, particularly crushed mussel shells. Or if you crush them yourself, then they're going to be sharper, and again, you can make a border around them. Using seaweed, using fresher seaweed, can also work as a border because it retains some salt, even after Mother Nature has washed it with the rain a bit. So, I mean, if you can maintain that kind of a barrier, and of course, it also means you've got to be careful to remove the slugs that are on the inside of the bed or the box. Using the copper strips, if you can find some of those, that can work for a while, and again, it depends on the quality. Some of the copper is extremely thin, lightweight material and doesn't last very long. So, but I mean, if you can get and you can afford, it lasts a long time, the strips of copper flashing
right.
that you can go to your local hardware store or if you've got a sheet metal shop in town that might do something like that, or you can order it too. And get that, and if you've got wooden boxes, then you tack it, and you can get these copper-coated nails. You can tack it to the outside of the box and as a barrier. And again, you've got to work to keep the slugs out of it in the first place, as well as being careful that any plants don't hang over the sides of the box, down to the ground, down to the grass, or whatever, because the slugs can use it as a ladder to get up into your bed.
Yes.
So it is, it's no vigilance out there because we're planting all these good and tasty crops that some other creature is going to want to come along, other than us, I mean.
Yeah, of course. Right. They want them. Who could blame them? They're so delicious. Yeah, so that's interesting. So crushed up mussel shells from the beach and copper. Copper is toxic for slugs. They don't really want to crawl across it. It kills them, I think, right? Or
it's not so much toxic as it their moisture from their slime actually apparently sets up somewhat of an electrical charge system,
right.
That's the more repellent part. Not that it's necessarily toxic to solid slime.
Wow, cool.
Using sand, using clean sand or something like a fine gravel, especially a crushed gravel,
yeah,
will help. Rather than allowing grass to grow in between your boxes and beds, mm-hmm. which is very definitely slug habitat.
Oh yeah, so that's just part of kind of the landscaping with your beds, right? Like think about things that will be natural slug fences. Maybe invite your friend over who's raising ducks, let them throw their ducks out there for a little while and go to town. Be conscientious that your potting soil or your potted plants are very possibly the source of some of these slugs. When you see the slugs, pick them up, get rid of them. Lots of different approaches to take.
So this also applies, this applies in our gardens too, where we talk about removing some of the plants, like in the greenhouse, that either aren't producing or are starting to get moldy. But it's out in the open gardens too. Say if you've got, you've already harvested your cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, lettuce is going to bolt, at least the first crop is, and some other things, pea plants, maybe you've both done producing. So get them out of the garden, remove them so they are not habitat for slugs, root maggots, and other things.
Yeah.
Some of these, if it's clean enough, certainly you work on making a compost pile with them. If you've got access to some manure, mix that in, mix in some seaweed in, that's the basis of some compost. But what you don't want to be using for your composting would be the roots, especially if you have a problem with cabbage root maggots. You wouldn't want to put those roots in there. That would not be good. So you'd want to just put those in garbage bags or on a burn pile and burn them up. Get them rid of there.
Yeah.
Same thing if you've got some of these, say, radishes that have bolted. Again, they too may have slugs too on there.
Right.
So the slugs will help break down your compost, and it's pretty tough to keep them out if you've got a compost pile on the ground or something like that. But at the same time, you are encouraging worms, which will help break down some of that compost, along with good fungi and stuff.
Hmm, right. So you do want to chuck out those plants if they have root maggots, but maybe some slugs on the ones that you're clearing out aren't the end of the world. But you want to primarily get those out of the beds once they've done their useful work in the garden so they don't themselves become habitat for pests in your own beds. And, yeah, if they're not infested in a bad way with some other pest, use them in the compost pile.
Usually, you recommend not throwing your potato vines into compost. That's another one to get rid of, send it off to the dump, just in case, because potatoes are such a big crop for us that we want to be careful not to get any diseases that might continue to survive in the compost, because unless you can make hot compost, which pretty much tends to need some manure, like dry manure, lots of hay, or something else in that, to balance out the greens and the browns in your manure pile, that can make things cook. So again, if the folks, I'm sure there's lots of people around Petersburg raising chickens, perhaps rabbits, I don't know what other livestock you might have there, but if you can get some of that, is really good for compost starter or compost accelerator.
Right.
Again, I'm fortunate to have a neighbor with horses, and that stuff really cooks.
Mm.
So that's a plus, too. But otherwise, it's really difficult to get hot enough compost that might kill the weed seeds, or even if you're cutting off flowering plants, if you don't want a whole lot of flowers to spread out of your compost, then you need to not throw in that those stems, those flower stems that might be nearing maturity.
Right, right. Well, that's a lot of good stuff for us to think about, and I think we've kind of we've covered a lot, and we've sort of run out of time. So, but I thank you for all that great advice there, Ed, and I'll let you get back to all the hard work you've got going on in your garden too, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I've got to load up my truck with plants for a landscaping project, and hopefully we'll get home and do some gardening at home tonight yet also, along with nice fresh salads with all those greens and cucumbers and tomatoes and other stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I mean, despite the when we have conversations like this where it's all about the battle and the labor and the casualties and the dangers in the garden, the most important part is everything delicious and wonderful that's coming out of that garden. So make sure you reward yourself after your hard work battling the slugs and everything else with some delicious salad and the goodies that you've grown this summer.
That, and it's always important when we, you know, we start looking at stuff and say, hey, I can't eat all this lettuce. Get out and find somebody to share it with so they can enjoy some of your garden too.
Absolutely. All right, Ed. Until next time, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Talk next week.
All right. Okay. Until then, bye-bye.
Nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love.
As usual, a huge thank you to Master Gardener Ed Byarski for sharing his knowledge with us as we fight the good fight for gardens in Southeast Alaska. And, as usual, support for this program comes from The Flower Farm. And they have trees available out there. Cherry, apple, Katsura, mountain ash, golden chain, maple, dogwood, and choke cherry. And all kinds of great, beautiful flowers, dahlias, bouquets. You can even get a subscription of bouquets from the Flower Farm. They'll deliver them to you. Brighten up your kitchen and your life. Flowers from the Flower Farm. Open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. And to those listeners out there who are signed up for our In the Garden garden tour this Sunday, I want to say hello. I'm excited about the tour. It's going to be great. We do have maybe one or two more spots open for those who haven't signed up yet and really want to go on the garden tour. It is pretty close to filled up, though, so we're going to have a great local gardening adventure this Sunday. So I'll see you guys out there at the community garden at 1 p.m. on Sunday for those on the garden tour. All right, thanks again for listening. This is Oren Pearson. Coming up next is the High Country Show with your host, Zach Christensen. Maybe I'll play a song or two, because I think he's skateboarding towards the station right now. Thanks again.